Welcome to this week's edition of Flashback Friday, your opportunity to get some good review by listening to episodes from the past that Jason has handpicked to help you today in the present and propel you into the future. Enjoy.
Welcome to the Holistic Survival Show with Jason Hartman. The economic storm brewing around the world is set to spill into all aspects of our lives. Are you prepared? Where are you going to turn for the critical life skills necessary to survive and prosper? The Holistic Survival Show is your family's insurance for a better life. Jason will teach you to think independently, to understand threats, and how to create the ultimate action plan. Sudden change or worst case scenario, you'll be ready. Welcome to Holistic Survival, your key resource for protecting the people, places, and profits you care about in uncertain times. Ladies and gentlemen, your host, Jason Hartman.
Welcome to the Holistic Survival Show. This is your host, Jason Hartman, where we talk about protecting the people, places, and profits you care about in these uncertain times. We have a great interview for you today, and we will be back with that in less than 60 seconds on the Holistic Survival Show. And by the way, be sure to visit our website at holisticsurvival.com. You can subscribe to our blog, which is totally free, has loads of great information, and there's just a lot of good content for you on the site. So make sure you take advantage of that at holisticsurvival.com. We'll be right back.
You know, Penny, sometimes I think of Jason Hartman as a walking encyclopedia on the subject of creating wealth.
Well, you're probably not far off from the truth, Britch. Jason actually has a 6-book set on creating wealth that comes with over 100 hours of the most comprehensive ideas on investing in business. They're in high-quality digital download audio format, ready for your car, iPod, or wherever you want to learn.
Yes, and by the way, he's recently added another book to the series that shows you investing the way it should be. This is a world where anything less than a 26% annual return is disappointing.
Jason actually shows us how we can be excited about these scary times and exploit the incredible opportunities this present economy has afforded us.
We can pick local markets that are untouched by the economic downturn, exploit packaged commodities investing, and achieve exceptional returns safely and securely.
I like how he teaches us how to protect the equity in your home before it disappears and how to outsource your debt obligations to the government.
He's recorded interviews with Harry Dent, Peter Schiff, Robert Kiyosaki, Pat Buchanan, Catherine Austin Fitz, Dr. Dennis Waitley, T. Harv Eker, and so many others who are experts on the economy, on real estate, and on creating wealth.
And the entire set of advanced strategies for wealth creation is being offered with a savings of $385.
Now, to get your Creating Wealth Encyclopedia series complete with over 100 hours of audio and 6 books, go to jasonhartman.com/store.
If you want to be able to sit back and collect checks every month, just like a banker, Jason's Creating Wealth Encyclopedia series is for you.
My pleasure to welcome Sidney Ross Singer to the show. He is the author of several books, and he is a medical anthropologist. And we're going to talk about various lifestyle changes that any of us can make and things that are making us sick out there that we may not realize. And I know some of these things in this interview today will surprise you. He'll give out his website. It's killerculture.com, but he'll give that out again later in the show. And Sidney, welcome. How are you?
I'm fine, Jason. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us. Where are you located?
I'm on the Big Island of Hawaii on the east side, having a beautiful sunny trade wind day today.
What a beautiful place. Well, tell us a little bit about your background and what it is you do.
Well, what I do is I'm sort of an out-of-the-box kind of person. I have background in medicine, anthropology, and biochemistry. I was in graduate PhD programs and all of that. But I integrated all of them to be what I call an applied medical anthropologist. And what I do is I look at ourselves and our culture, and I find out what it does that's making us sick. Because, you know, most of the causes of death in the first world and disease is our lifestyle. I mean, that's recognized by everyone. But these lifestyles are usually things that you're not even aware of. Most of the time, when you say lifestyle to people, they think exercise, diet, you know, basic things like that. But I'm talking about things that we take for granted, the way we sleep, the way we dress, whether we vocalize or not, how we go about our lives. I picked some specific examples because in this show I wanted to share with the listeners some new research that we're doing on various diseases, from thyroid disease to all sorts of brain problems and breast cancer and everything.
Fantastic. Where would you like to start? I think one of the most interesting parts of what you've done recently is your new information on sleep, right?
Yes. Well, the sleep research has become so fascinating and so important because we keep on seeing more conditions that it's related to. And what it is that in our culture, people are basically sleeping too flat for too long. And by too flat, I mean where head is down without enough elevation. And we already know in science, in medicine, that when you raise the head of the bed, like in an adjustable bed when you're in a hospital, they raise the beds because there are a lot of conditions that helps, like acid reflux after brain surgery or trauma. It improves circulation. And that's because when your body is vertical versus horizontal, there are different impacts on brain circulation due to gravity. You know, gravity is always pulling our fluids down. And when you're standing upright, your heart is below your head and has to pump blood up to your brain. And gravity resists that. And then once it goes through the brain, it has to drain back to the heart, and gravity assists that. Well, when you lie down, the heart and head are on the same level. So there's no gravity assistance any longer to drainage of the brain. And there's no gravity resistance to the pressure of the brain. So what we feel in the morning after a night of lying down is typically your whole face and head are getting pressurized overnight.
Is that why you're puffy in the morning?
Absolutely. And yeah, it's puffy. Okay. Everything in the head is puffy.
And you know what's interesting? An anesthesiologist friend of mine told me that people who have brain tumors and so forth will tend to get headaches in the morning when they first wake up, maybe as a result of that blood flow issue. But here's where I don't know what to think of what you're saying, because the ancient Egyptians used to think that you should raise your feet. And you're kind of saying the opposite, not that they're right, modern science is wrong.
Well, I think you want to raise your feet as well. The ideal position for sleep would be like in a recliner or in a
zero gravity chair, maybe that sort of shape.
Well, your buttocks should be the lowest point, like you're back in a dentist chair.
Yeah, right, which is like a zero gravity.
Your head is up
chair,
and your feet are up, and your butt should be the lowest spot. And a hammock is a traditional way that people have slept for long times. Orangutans use hammocks. I mean, a hammock. You also want to be on your back because. And that's easier when you're elevated. People don't like being on their backs when they're flat. It's very uncomfortable. But we're not supposed to be flat because of this pressure issue. And by the way, as soon as you raise the bed, like several inches, the head of the bed, and make like a little incline plane, the circulation is tremendously improved. And they've already discovered this in space medicine.
Certainly helps for acid reflux, too.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, but here's the problem, though. I think most people sleep on their side. I know I do. Now, I'm glad to say I have an adjustable bed that I purchased a Select Comfort bed and got the adjustable option on it. And, you know, I used to love it to watch TV and so forth, but I no longer have a TV in my bedroom, so which is probably better anyway. But, you know, good for reading. But I like to sleep on my side. What do you do? How do you train yourself to be a back sleeper?
Well, that's a very good question, and it's the best thing is to start off with your children sleeping on their back, but it's hard to break your habits. Now, sleeping on the side, why is that bad? First of all, realize you're going to spend a third of your life in that position, and there's a lot of weight in your body leaning on whatever it is on the bottom. Have you ever awakened with numb arms, Jason? I mean,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Well, that's because of the compression cutting off the circulation, and you do that year after year, and you lean on your wrist, you lean on your elbow, you're going to get compression injuries. So people can get carpal tunnel problems, they can get nerve impingements and pain that they don't realize where is this coming from. Also, let's say you're a right side sleeper, and you're leaning on your right arm as you're sleeping. Well, your appendix is on your right side. You could be pushing your arm right into your appendix. You could be affecting your internal circulation as organs lean on other things. Now, if you're – so both sides, you got a problem just with your torso and your arms and then your legs. If you're compressing as you lean on your side, your legs are going to compress your testicles, and you're going to be basically cutting off circulation to your prostate and all that area.
So is that why, you know, like the chiropractors want you to sleep with a little pillow between your knees?
Yeah, that would help with the circulation there, yes. And sitting in chairs for too long can cause prostate congestion and problems. So, you know, realize that putting our legs together is not good for men. And, you know, even for women, it probably isn't a good thing. But then you go up to the head. You're leaning on what side of your face is down. That side, the ear, is going to get compressed. And children and adults will get all sorts of ear problems. So kids have middle ear infections and all sorts of ear. You just put them on their back, get them off their ear. They're leaning on the ear. Your eye that's down will usually be the worse eye if you have any ocular differences, like for glasses. The eye that's down is usually the worst eye. Your nose will start to bend away from the downside because you're pressing on it on the pillow. Belly sleeping is the worst because
your neck is terrible.
Yes, and as soon as you turn your head to the side, pressure in your brain goes up. I mean, they've taken studies on this. Everything I'm telling you actually is known by space medicine, but they don't talk to regular doctors because in zero gravity in space, fluid shifts to the head because there's no gravity resistance and drain. So astronauts get all sorts of problems. They get ear problems. They get migraines. And migraines is very important. We did a study on migraines, was the original head elevation study we did. And what we figured is the migraine is actually a defense mechanism. Because what happens with a migraine, and it's in the morning, so stuff that's in the morning you know is from something you did overnight. So it's a good hint that it's a nighttime sleep problem. So, and you wake up with this headache that's throbbing and blood is pulsing through your head, your arteries open up. What it is a brain flush. Because when you're down all night congested like this, the pressure builds in your head, the fluid gets stagnant, the circulation is not good. It's got to push itself through to circulate rather than having gravity help circulate. And then the fluid becomes low in oxygen, low in sugar, and your brain is you break up, you're groggy, you're not clear-minded. And the only way for your brain, there are centers in the brain that can really starve from this and dysfunction, including things like in your pituitary. I mean, think about what's going on in your brain. You have hormone regulation going on as well as the central nervous system, and all that system is being pressurized and hypoxic, and it's just not functioning well because of constant pressure every day. So it's going to affect all sorts of things. Well, for your brain to cope, it often will do a migraine, which is a brain flush, and people feel better because it's the only way you're going to replace the brain fluid is by pushing it through with fresh fluid. So migraines have been shown, in fact, to be protective against degenerative brain diseases because it is like a defense mechanism. We had people raise their beds, their migraines went away after decades of migraines. These were chronic migraineurs. Nothing would help these people. They raised their bed, and within a couple of days, even the next morning, they feel better. Their migraines went away, and it was incredible. You got to try that because this is what it is our beds used to be a lot more saggy in the middle. The old bed mattresses were saggier, the springs were saggier. Now we're really into flat beds. And we as a culture are into flat sleeping. And Jason, like you said, you have an adjustable bed, but yet you sleep with it down.
I do, yeah.
That's because the culture has this side sleeping preference. And in Asian cultures, they have a back sleeping preference. And that's why their heads are round and ours are oblong, because we're leaning on the head and that changes the shape. You actually change your bones, your bone shape, by the constant pressure and weight of your body. So, you know, and these are all facts. And in sudden infant death syndrome, they know what happens is the kids have to be on their back, because if the head is turned to the side, as soon as you turn your neck, it compresses the neck veins that drain the brain and causes fluid buildup. It backs up and your head builds up pressure. So these kids can't even lift their head when they're infants. They're very, you know, just they need help. So you place them on their belly. They're helpless to turn over. So you have to put them on their back with their heads up. You should also elevate them slightly. And if you look at cultures that are not as westernized, they'll often hang their babies in a hammock and their heads are up and the kid is comfortable. And oftentimes the baby will fall asleep on your shoulder. You lay them down. As soon as you do that, they start to wake up and cry. That's because their heads suddenly get pressurized and they're not comfortable. If you put them down instead in one of those baskets that hold the kid's head up, like that you can walk with them and so forth, like a car seat type of thing, a little more of an incline, so the kid it's comfortable, like an adjustable bed position, like I'm saying. The child will probably not even wake up. It's just the head pressure is uncomfortable for the baby. So they recognize head position. And but this is an area of science that is tremendously understudied and under-discussed, because you could do a wedge, you could do a couple extra pillows, you could put blocks under your bed to make an incline plane. It's not a big moneymaker. And sleep apnea, by the way, has been shown to be cured by head elevation. It's known. It's, again, I think the respiratory centers in the brainstem are getting too congested and hypoxic. They're not functioning right. And there's actual sudden death syndromes that people have while sleeping, which is caused by their respiratory centers failing. And I think it's all due to this. Even acne is affected by this. Glaucoma. Eye pressure is known to be affected by head position. I mean,
let me just stop you. I believe you. Now the question is, how do you do it? I mean, so the only thing is just sleep in that shape, more like the zero gravity chair, you know, feet elevated slightly, head elevated, like you're in a recliner. Yeah. What, anything else on that? On the
sleep? Well, the other things to consider are, you need to, if your neck is tight, like you've had a neck injury, then the muscles in your neck are going to be pretty constricted, and that can cut down on brain circulation as well. Because when you have anything tight, the first things that are cut down are lymphatics, the second are veins, and third are arteries because of the pressure issues. So if you put anything tight around your neck, like tight collars with neckties, and you see guys with their neck veins sticking out, look at that. Look at that next time you're at a business meeting. How many guys have neck veins sticking out of their necks because of their tight collars? That's cutting off brain circulation, and they're having high brain pressure at those times. Their eye pressure is high, their sinus, everything, your whole head. So these are some other tips. So you want to get good neck massages, neck adjustments. If you have chronic neck injury, you may have constant problems in your life associated with brain congestion. So elevation of the bed is something everyone should do. But on the other hand, if you have low blood pressure, and you need more brain pressure at the end of the day, you know, gravity does drain your whole body and your ankles start to swell. It's really just a simple gravity pulling thing, fluid down. So if at the end of the day you have a headache, that's usually a low pressure headache that when you go lie down feels better. That's how you confirm it's a low pressure. In that case, you probably don't want to have your bed elevated more than like 10, 15 degrees. The optimal is 30 degrees as scientists have found out at NASA. That's optimal for both heart rate. The heart beats better when your head, when your torso is at a 30 degree incline than when you're flat. And your brain circulates better.
All right. So any tips on how to do it? And then let's move on because there's so much I want to cover with you.
Oh, yeah. Well, you just try it. Keep aware. If you wake up in the middle of the night in the wrong position, go back on your back. And if you're conscious of it and really just are committed to it, you'll find that it'll just change your life in a very short period of time.
So besides sleeping, what else can people do?
Well, the other issues, of course, are tight clothing. And we're known internationally for our work with breast cancer and the link between breast cancer and constrictive brassieres. And what's happening is tight clothing of any form, it causes compression injuries on your body. And the first thing it does is compress your lymphatic system, which is the circulatory pathway of your immune system, and drains the lymph fluid out of your tissues. And so whenever you wear anything tight, it's impairing these tiny lymphatic vessels that drain these tissues and leads to lymph nodes, which filter the fluid, and white blood cells are produced there, and it's your immune system. But with the bra, the breasts, which have to drain most of their fluid to the armpit lymph nodes, are restricted, and the compression causes this fluid backup. The lymph fluid can't properly drain. And you could see that there's compression if you take the bra off and you see red marks around your shoulders and around your breasts. And, you know, that shows that it's too tight. If you have red marks and indentations on your skin after taking anything off, socks, girdles, pants, you shouldn't even wear girdles or corsets, but they sort of seem to be coming back. Anything tight.
Yeah, I was going to say to you, what about the old Victorian days of all the ladies wearing the corsets? That must have been
really killing women. They were killing women for centuries. Women used to bind their feet in China for like 1,000 years, and it caused this necrosis of the toes. Literally, the toes would just rot, and men would change the wrapping on their women's feet, and this was an erotic thing for them. And that was going on for centuries. So we have what happens with the culture is, we try to change nature, and we eroticize that, and then it becomes a fashion. But as soon as we try to change nature, we've changed the way we work. And there's a design in the way we work. And it's, and we're supposed to work a certain way, and we heal, and we're fantastic machines that work properly, except if you get in the way with this stupid programming that our culture gives us, that breasts need to be higher and look a certain way, or bottoms need to look a certain way, or heads need to look a certain way. I mean, people have altered their body shape since there's culture. And it causes disease. You know, it just interferes with your body's natural mechanisms.
I had a guest on my show before that talked about the chemicals used in the production of modern clothing nowadays. Non-iron clothing. I've come to love those non-iron shirts. Do I have some pretty bad chemicals rubbing against my skin?
Of course. And I think the chemical pollution is really bad in our world. But if our bodies circulate properly, a lot of these chemicals will course through our bodies and we'll get rid of them. That's why we're all not dropping like flies everywhere. But we are sick. I mean, this country is full of cancers and all of this. But the problem is our circulation is not adequate. I think in order to get rid of all these poisons, A, avoid them for sure. B, and that's in your food, pesticides, herbicides, all sorts of things you don't realize you're eating, the plastics lining the containers, the plastics in everything. All of these are toxic, and they need to get out of your body. One of the things that's interesting is toxins cause obesity. These pesticides are known to cause obesity because our body stores them in fat and slowly eliminates them, or they'll kill us too fast. I mean, they're fat soluble, so our body fat cells absorb these as a buffer to keep these poisons out of the circulation in huge quantities and to slowly eliminate them. And the more toxins we take in, the more fat we need to store this stuff. And that's one of the contributors to our obesity epidemic. And this is a fact. Just Google pesticides and obesity.
Question on all this stuff is really, how do we flush these things out? Because I think if you're going to live anywhere close to the modern world, you know, and even in nature, there are toxins too, but let's just take the modern world. You're going to come in contact with so many various toxins. How do we flush them? How do we do a better job of you know, not avoiding them, but just getting them out if they get in?
Well, you have to just have good circulation, exercise, don't wear anything tight, do a lot of massage, keep your body limber. And mostly, you know, I think sometimes a lot of it is your attitude. I think if you think something is going to be poisonous to you, you're going to react to it that way. And some people are so hypersensitized. You can do this with hypnosis, and in a way it is hypnosis. When people are so conditioned to feeling a certain way about chemicals that they could be hypersensitive and then react to it. And then the same person, if their minds were changed to not be hypersensitive to that, they won't react. Like I know under hypnosis, I was told by a hypnotist, he hypnotized his wife to eat an onion that he said was an apple. And she took it and ate it with no problems, thought it was a delicious apple. And then he gave her an apple and told her it was an onion. And she was tearing, and it was incredible. So the power of the mind has to be considered here.
So becoming completely compulsive about all of this stuff, that's the problem. You know, everyone hears this show and they want to go out and like change their whole life and be totally compulsive. And, you know, I have an ex-girlfriend, I tease her, I say, you have orthorexia. And maybe you probably know what orthorexia is, but maybe our listeners don't know. It's someone who's obsessed with eating organic foods and just their diet, they become crazy with it.
Well, it's a religion after a while. Yeah, right. And I think there's a lot of people who prey on that. And I think, you know, prey on it in terms of products. And they're preying on fear like everybody else. And I think in these very difficult times where people don't know who to trust and they're very skeptical and very afraid of everything, you know, they have to calm down. And I think you want to avoid these things. I live in Hawaii to get away from it, okay? And I give people an opportunity at our self-study retreat center here to get away from it and try lifestyle changes, because it's sometimes hard in the context of the real mainland world. But what you need to try are what we call self-studies, which are lifestyle changes on yourself that you then see. These are risk-free and cost-free. You know, you just like, let me wear looser clothes and see how I feel. Let me get rid of my bra for a month and see how I feel. Let me raise my bed. I'll tell you a few more, but these are things you need to try. And we give them to people on our website, killerculture.com, self-studies. This is what you do. This is what you can expect. And we support them in these. It's very important to take your life into your own hands and not really trust anything but your own feelings and instincts on what feels right. And that's the beauty of it. Our bodies really know what feels good for us and what feels bad. And if we learn to listen to that, we can avoid a lot of these pitfalls. But you don't want to be so worried and anxious and adrenalized about everything that you're stressed out to where your own reaction is so out of proportion to the problem that we give ourselves these psychological, psychosomatic problems that could be extremely debilitating. And it doesn't mean it isn't real. I mean, it feels extremely real, but it's a hypersensitivity. And if it's hypersensitive, you know it's your brain that's dealing with it. It's psychological because there's no functional benefit to our bodies overreacting to things. We're supposed to react in a way that's survival focused, that helps us survive. If something disables us, it's not helping us. So our reactions that are hypersensitivities are really a combination of a normal reaction that's amped up with a lot of fear and psychological stuff. And I think people need to calm that fear down so they can really listen to their bodies accurately and not be so sensitive. But some people are probably going to say, well, you don't really understand how sensitive I am. But I really do. And I've been through that myself with hypersensitivities. And I saw on myself how it was connected to my stress level. When my stress level goes down, my hypersensitivities go down. And I'm able to cope in the world. When my stress level is up, I could be like, I have problems like everybody else. So I recognize that in myself, and I try to keep my stress down, and I try to see my symptoms as a reaction to stress.
Yeah, you mentioned, in terms of getting rid of toxins, you mentioned yoga, certainly eating right, drinking a lot of water, I suppose would be a great thing.
It depends on what kind of water. You don't want to drink deionized water. That's a real problem. A lot of people are drinking demineralized water, which can really mess up your electrolyte balance, and it could deplete you of minerals. And this idea that you have to drink like 8 glasses of purified water every day, I don't believe in any regimens like that. I think it's good to keep hydrated and know the signs of dehydration, but you want to hydrate with things that have electrolytes in it, juices and mineral water and more natural sources of liquid, not deionized, demineralized through a filter that's very modern and not natural type water.
Well, so what about, let's talk about that for a minute. What about the various bottled waters, Smart Water, Aquafina, Dasani, all the Arrowhead, all those brands of water out there that people grab a bottle and go on their way? Is there a preference there? I mean, are those deionized? Some of them?
Well, I don't know. Each one has its own way, I'm sure, in their own sales pitch. But, first of all, if it's in plastic, you're getting plastic as an unintentional food additive. And that's from the FDA. I once called them on that because I smelled an old water bottle that was emptied and resealed under the sink. And I opened it up and smelled it. And I was like blown over by the smell of plastic. And I thought, geez, I drank this. So, you get more in your water than you think.
And the plastic leaching issue is really the issue of the hormones, right? Is that messing up hormone balance? And is that the, the feminization of society issue? I heard about that on the news a few years ago.
Yeah, they're called xenoestrogens. And that means they mimic estrogens and their environmental chemicals. And a lot of them seem to do that. But that might just be one mechanism of their action. They're just not good for us. I mean, that's why cancer is so prevalent. We live in a petrochemically polluted world like crazy. And that's like the standard anymore. People are so used to all of these health problems that becomes normal.
Well, it's a big industry, Cancer is big business, unfortunately.
It is. And I've run into that with my Dress to Kill work and just getting them to even pay attention to these issues when it's not coming from, it's not giving any new treatments or surgery. And I mean, this is another thing. I want to mention some other issues for your listeners because there's so many that we've discovered that are related to simple lifestyle. Take thyroid disease. Low thyroid is a major problem and high thyroid. We think they're all both related to vocalization. Now, this will show you how limited medicine can be sometimes in the way they think. But the human body has a real functional significance to the way things are made. And the thyroid gland, which controls your metabolism and releases thyroxin, that which is a hormone, that gland is right beneath your Adam's apple in your throat, right? Which is the prominence, the cartilage prominence in your throat is your Adam's apple. Right beneath that, on both sides of it, like a butterfly, is your thyroid gland. Now, if you talk and feel yourself right over there, it vibrates. You are vibrating your thyroid when you speak. Now, the thyroid has the thyroxin stored inside of it in a gel type substance. It's stored like a jelly. And massage therapists know that if you massage the thyroid, you make it release thyroxin, so it can be mechanically stimulated to release hormone. And people, there's already been a study that shows that people get vibrational injury to their thyroid from things like heavy, loud music, especially with deep bass. Like if you go to raves, the low frequency noise can cause vibrational injury to your thyroid, and so can people working in loud factories.
What does it do, that vibrational industry? What's the result of it? What happens to the person when they
your cells are getting bombarded with an intense vibration that causes mechanical injury to the membranes. And so it's like you're just, it's like an ultrasonic boom to your cells.
You know, I actually heard that, this is kind of interesting that you bring that up, because I actually heard years ago that as much as it annoys me, that bassy deep music that's so popular nowadays is mm-hmm. actually good for you, because it vibrates your body and makes the cells move, and you know, even makes lymph move and circulation occur.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, you know, kind of like a jacuzzi tub would be, or a jacuzzi pool, right?
I know, and I went to one just to feel it, and it does. Your body is vibrating. But what you need to do is research something called vibroacoustic disease, or VAD. And what it is, it's related to low-frequency noise, LFNs they're called. But VAD is a bad condition that what happens even in – you get lung problems from these – from heavy, low-frequency noise, like in these places that vibrate you. The cilia, which are the cells on some of your cells, actually cleave. I mean, it breaks them off. So they can't, like in your windpipe, we have these little hairs that brush the mucus up towards your throat. These things get cleaved by this type of sound. You know, all your membranes, you get inflamed. You get headaches and generalized inflammation, and you can get joint pain. It's not a good thing. But that's an example of how your thyroid is one of the first organs that will be affected by vibration, because it's like a gel inside. So if people, medicine doesn't even consider the issue of how the voice affects the thyroid. They think about how the thyroid affects the voice. Especially for singers and things, if they get a goiter, you know, a swelling in their thyroid for iodine deficiency or a tumor, that can impinge on the nerves leading to the vocal cords and all of that. So you can actually get voice problems with a thyroid problem. But the opposite, which is getting a thyroid problem from either underutilizing your voice, which means you don't stimulate it enough, and you get hypo, and a lot of women who get hypothyroidism are living alone, they're on the computer, we're chatting more, internet chatting, not vocal chatting. We don't sing anymore together and in groups. We're more recipients of entertainment. So we become quieter, and I think those people are going to start suffering from hypothyroidism. And then there are people who yell and will have episodes of stress in their lives and will really blow their thyroids by yelling too much. And that over-vibrates and will cause a transient hyperthyroidism, too much thyroid in your system. And if you're like yelling a lot, an example, I had a neighbor who moved into the neighborhood, and he was yelling at cars driving too by on this rural road too fast. He didn't want him to go so fast. So he was just yelling at him for months. And then he developed hyperthyroidism and didn't know about my work in this. So he went to the doctor. And of course, what doctors will do is they'll give you radioactive iodine to see if your thyroid takes it up to what degree, and that indicates thyroid activity, but that kills the thyroid, and they'll give you more of that to burn out the thyroid, which he had done, and now he's taking thyroid pills the rest of his life. So medicine often tries to have medical answers. Medicine and surgery are the goals of medical care, and the just as if you went to a chiropractor, adjustments are the goals of chiropractic care. I mean, that's the methods of these things. So the method of what I do is look at, what are you doing? Are you singing? Are you speaking enough? Are you vocalizing enough to keep your thyroid properly stimulated? And if not, those are the kind of self-studies I would suggest. You know, sing for 30 minutes, three times a day, or hum or chant. All of that will be good for aerating and for lymphatic pumping and for stimulating your thyroid. But so those that's an idea about the thyroid that people can really try on themselves. It'll take probably a few weeks to see the difference, because thyroid thyroxine takes a little while to kick in once your cells are stimulated by it. So you won't see like next day results, but you might see it by next week, or following week, more energy by singing more. And if you've done too much yelling, be quiet for a while. Give your voice and your thyroid a rest. And with time, they heal. Our bodies do heal once we stop.
But overall, the singing and talking is actually good for your thyroid? Was that what you were saying?
Normal amounts of it are.
Okay. So really quiet people may actually be damaging their thyroid.
Yeah. And in fact, I got a nun that just emailed me that said that she hasn't spoken for a very long time. And she has thyroid issues and was very intrigued with this issue. I'm hoping to do a study with nuns. That'll be kind of interesting on this, to find groups of people that either under or overutilize their voice. Now, deaf mutes, people who are born with deaf mutism, they can't speak or hear, they under vocalize, obviously, and they are known to develop thyroid problems by adolescence. They're on thyroid medication because they just don't get developed thyroids very well. So I think the stimulation of with occasional talking and chanting and singing, think about how cultures would normally do that together. They sing together. They make noise. That's an important part of our health. It's actually just vocalizing. So yeah, it is interesting, all these subtle ways in which our culture changes us.
Good stuff. Well, this is good to know. Sydney, give out your website, if you would, and tell people where they can learn more.
Yes, killerculture.com, and sign up for our Sick Times newsletter. Right now, we just sent one out. It's about sleep position, giving people some tips on how to best change their sleep behaviors and how to make it work. And I encourage people to just join our community of, about self-awareness. Be aware of how you feel, listen to your body, and try to, if anything goes wrong, the first thing you should ask is, what am I doing to myself that I could stop doing so my body can heal? Because that's usually the problem. It's something that we're getting in the way of normal health, and it's the culture that makes us do it. So,
very good points.
Killerculture.com.
Excellent. Sydney Ross Singer, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing some of these tips with us. I am going to immediately try and change how I sleep beginning this evening. We'll see.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah.
I hope you let me know, Jason. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today for the Holistic Survival Show, protecting the people, places, and profits you care about in uncertain times. Be sure to listen to our Creating Wealth Show, which focuses on exploiting the financial and wealth creation opportunities in today's economy. Learn more at www.jasonhartman.com or search Jason Hartman on iTunes. This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company, offering very general guidelines and information. Opinions of guests are their own, and none of the content should be considered individual advice. If you require personalized advice, please consult an appropriate professional. Information deemed reliable, but not guaranteed.